Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Alyssa Friedland, and she is out with her brand new novel, Last Summer at the Golden Hotel. The book takes us up to the Catskills of New York, and if any of us have seen Dirty Dancing, kind of know the setting. But Alyssa, I thought this is just a fantastic place to set a novel. It's a family story, but it's actually two families that own this hotel together. And I've stayed at hotels throughout the course of my 40 plus years in this world. I never know who owns them, and so I don't even think about it, but this whole idea of the hotels in the Catskills where people go on their holiday, on their vacations, and spend that, what are these hotels like for the people that are the customers, because they really become part of the family?
They really were second homes for the families that went there. There were over 2,000 hotels and bungalow colonies at the peak of this area, which was called the Borscht Belt, and people spent very extended trips. I mean, this is a different era where people weren't connected 24/7 to their jobs. So people would come and take a room or a cottage for an entire month. Some women and children would spend the entire summer, and their husbands would come up on the weekends, and people would return year after year. So you saw the same families. So these hotels were homes.
This book, in particular, is set sort of in the present day, before COVID, obviously, but it brings us into the lives of the Goldmans and the Weingolds who own this place. And can you kind of set up how this type of ownership worked and how the families evolved over the years?
Yes. So the hotel was built by two best friends, Amos and Benny Goldman and Weingold, and they built it in 1960. So it's new compared to its competitors that had many of them been around since, you know, 1930, 1940, which gives it a competitive advantage and kind of allows it to be the last one standing even as the area starts to deteriorate. Amos and Benny get married, both of them, and their spouses don't click quite the same way that they do, as often happens with best friends. And they can, you know, they have families, they have children, then they have grandchildren. And the hotel was really the hottest spot in the Catskills, where everybody wanted to see and be seen, and unbelievable entertainers came and performed. And then the gradual decline happens, and we're led to 2019, where one of the family members is running the hotel day to day. Not exactly his dream job, but it's where he ended up. And an offer comes in, a very nice, generous offer comes in from a company that wants to tear down the buildings and build a casino in its place, which brings the two families that co-own the hotel up to campus, as I call it, for a week to decide what to do.
One of the things I liked is I've never read a book like this where you have the family dynamic going on, but it's two families and it's almost a forced relationship because these were two best friends that got together and just by happenstance have forced these two families to become friends or acquaintances or have this relationship. So what are the dynamics like as a writer when you have to meld these two families that are together strictly by business? It's not any type of familial relationship other than that.
Well, I really wanted to write about that because my last book, The Floating Feldmans, was about one family, and I delved all into the sibling relationships and the generational warfare. But I also really wanted to get into friendship, and in bad ways and good ways. I mean, Amos and Benny, the two founders, really had an extraordinary friendship, and I have very close friends in my life, and I wanted a book that really celebrated friendship but also acknowledged the complications that come with it, because you can be very, very, very best friends. But then when you put a business in the picture and you co-own a business, there are complications. And when profits are at stake and you know, decisions have to be made, it's very difficult. And so the business being, I really deliberately chose the hotel to be owned by two families, not just one, because it was so, there was just so much more fodder for me as a writer and so many more issues to explore.
Well, and the hotel is really the child of the two oldest, the patriarchs of these families. And so when you're talking about younger generations, they don't have the same type of feelings. It isn't their baby that they brought up. And so how do you incorporate that into the thoughts and the character development of people that weren't involved at the beginning?
Well, you're touching on a huge theme. The older generation, they're very smart. They understand that the hotel is not doing well. They see what's happened to their competitors. But for them, every single piece of furniture has a story. Every food, every bite of food reminds them of the day that they introduced that new recipe to the dining room. The middle generation feels it, but definitely less so. The grandchildren are the most divorced from it, but this week there that they all spend together, which is not just a vacation week, it's a week to decide what to do, really wakens something in the grandchildren, and they all sort of have faced like a reckoning with their past and their culture and their history, and they look like, you know, one would think that the grandchildren would be like, sell it, let's get the money. But in fact, the grandchildren are, you know, especially a few of them, start to think, well, maybe we can fix this place. Maybe we shouldn't let it go.
One of the things that I noticed that you did in this book, and I turned past it right away before I read the book, is there's a sketch of the hotel right inside one of the first few pages of the book. And so when I saw that, I quickly flipped the page because I didn't want anything influencing in my mind how I pictured this hotel. That's one of the magical things about reading that I enjoy. And so why did you choose to include a sketch of the hotel there? Because the reader can paint his own picture.
That's interesting. I happen to love visuals in books, but I think you're quite right in the sense, like, you can just skip over it. If it's not, you know, you don't want to picture it, you can just skip over it. Although I think it's not super detailed, I would say. It's like it's a sketch,
sure.
But it's not so granular that, you know, it would interfere with the way somebody wants to picture it. And it's black and white also. So I think it's just like kind of sets the mood and shows the mountains, and shows just very rough sketches of the cottages, but doesn't, you know, actually give you a layout in the sense that it would interfere with, you know, one's own imagination.
With so many characters, with so many different opinions, did you find yourself rooting for one over the other at various times during the book?
You know, the biggest decision in the book was whether they should sell the hotel or whether they should keep it, and I felt so torn as I was writing it. It wasn't until I hit on what I am so proud of as what I consider the perfect ending. It took me a long time. I mean, I stayed up at night. I felt sick over it, which is so crazy because it's not real. But I was sick over it. I was like, they should sell. No, they should keep. They should sell. They should keep. And I just really, you know, wasn't sure what the right answer was. And then, you know, as sometimes happens, if you're lucky, when you're writing, the right answer comes to you. And in this case, it did. I won't give away any spoilers. But it was stressful. And as far as rooting for characters, I mean, I think there's something likable about almost every character in this book. And so I really love them all.
I thought it was interesting that you went to Yale University, Columbia Law School, and yet you're a full-time writer now. Well, you teach creative writing at Yale. What is it about lawyers? They go to law school, and it seems like half of them want to find something to do other than be lawyers.
Totally. And there's so many lawyers that become writers. Law school, I'm super honest about it. I wanted to be a writer when I graduated college, but I didn't really know how to make the career happen, and it's not very lucrative, you know, unless you're at the very, very, very top, which takes time. I thought, I love being a student. I'll not regret having this degree, and I went to law school. I actually did really enjoy law school. It was great. I had lots of friends. I enjoyed the classes. I did not enjoy being a lawyer, and so after 3 years of working at a law firm and just feeling so unsatisfied by my job, and I had no room to flex my creative muscle there, I quit. I said, I have to live my dream. But I think that for some people, the law is really interesting, and I think it depends on what area you go into. I was in very dry corporate law. I think there are areas that are far more fascinating.
Well, and I'm always interested in people that teach creative writing because I've always heard the term that anybody can write, and a lot of people have told me that over the years, and I don't know that I necessarily believe it. Do you find, or what's the biggest misconception that people who come into a creative writing program have when they get there versus what they know when they come out?
I think that people are a little skeptical that you can learn to be a better writer. And I do believe that talent is very important, like raw, natural talent and a facility with words, a facility with language. You can even hear it in the way people express themselves when they speak. I think there is a correlation to being like a pithy, witty speaker and a concise, crisp speaker and the way someone writes. But everyone can get better. Not everyone can be great. But I have strong students. I have weaker students. They're all better by the end, I would say. There are some obvious pitfalls that you can avoid. There are some things that after you take my class, you'll never make that mistake again. And you will read over your work and edit your work and see things that you would have missed before. That doesn't mean you're going to be a great writer by any means, but you will definitely be a better writer.
Well, I just found this book fascinating. It was a one-night read for me. It took me a few hours, and I couldn't put it down. The book is Last Summer at the Golden Hotel by Alyssa Friedland. The book's available now wherever books are sold. It's a great summer read. Alyssa, just a fantastic offering here, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.